Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. We're going to talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss here for the next half hour or so. We're glad you've chosen to click in with us today. Logan, how are you, man?
Trying to catch up, Parrish. I mean, it's been a busy week since you and I last talked. I mean, it's been a lot going on in Starkville. There's been two basketball exhibition games that I've covered. They had National Signing Day yesterday, and then Mississippi State's hired a new athletic director, hired a new baseball coach, and also they beat the number four team in the country last weekend. So it's been some, hadn't been no shortage of anything to write about this last week or so.
Well, it has been a busy several days for you on the beat there. I was thinking about that. Hey, folks, before we move on, I want to remind you about a couple of other podcasts to search for. Be sure to check out The Memo, our news podcast, All Things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And with the presidential election now complete, certainly no shortage of news going on there. And we're still dealing with Northeast Mississippi drought as well. Logan, I saw some rain on the radar in Louisiana earlier this week and found that I was coveting my neighbor's precipitation.
It actually rained here in Starkville just briefly, barely enough to get the ground wet. But it was nice to look out and see the parking lot a little damp. I mean, it's the first time I've seen that in quite a while. But, of course, like I said, it wasn't even really enough to probably even register. I mean, we need rain. I went to my parents' house this past weekend, and they have a pond, and it's as dried up as I've ever seen it in 30 years. I mean, it's a wonder there's any fish still living in it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's going to be a concern if this continues. I can ride the bike around the neighborhoods around here in these little lakes that you see here and there. You could walk across them about ankle deep, it looks like. Hey, folks, let's talk a little football. Logan, you did mention a big win for Mississippi State against Texas A&M, the Rebels taking on Texas A&M this weekend in College Station. We'll go ahead and start there because that game looks a lot different than it did maybe a couple of weeks ago. Both teams will be starting backup quarterbacks. Don't know exactly who that will be for Ole Miss. For A&M, the picture's a little clearer with Jake Hubenek starting. He's the number two for them. He does have the experience of at least having gone through a competition for the starting job. So he's had some playing time. He's had some good games, and he will start for A&M. Logan, I want to hear you talk about him in just a little bit, because I know you saw him against the Bulldogs. Ole Miss still has not named a starter. That's not surprising. We could tell on Monday at Hugh Freeze's press conference that this would be a week of gamesmanship when he started trotting out names like Markell Pack, Evan Ingram, and Jeremy Liggins as guys who could play quarterback this week. There are a lot of rumblings that Shea Patterson will play, the number one recruit, the number one quarterback in the recruiting class of 2016. Hugh Freeze has tried to redshirt Patterson. That looked like a plan he was going to be able to pull off until Chad Kelly's injury. Kelly tearing an ACL and a meniscus in the Rebels' 37-27 win over Georgia Southern last week. Now you have three games left, so do you pull a redshirt for three games? We'll find out if that's what Hugh Freeze will decide. The other guy who will, I think, certainly play some and perhaps start will be redshirt freshman Jason Pellerin. He's kind of been the backup this season, but he's really just been a situational player until the middle of the third quarter against Georgia Southern, when Pellerin came off the bench, had a lead, drove the Rebels to a couple of field goals, and basically just kind of parked the car. But he did a good job with that, and he has improved as a passer, but he's played very few meaningful snaps compared to what he could be asked to play against Texas A&M. Do you take the red shirt away from a guy like Shea Patterson with three games left? And I say you do, Logan. I think with three games, yes. You're trying to win these three games, obviously, but you also have a chance for Shea Patterson to develop and become a better quarterback if he is, in fact, your starter on the first Saturday in September next year when the Rebels are at home against South Alabama. Then 2 weeks later, they'll be traveling to play a Pac-12 game at Cal out in Berkeley. So you got three games now to really, I think, make Patterson a better player. You could have played him earlier in the year. You chose not to. I think the problem you dealt with then was, when did you want to take the ball out of Chad Kelly's hands? There was not a good time to do that. But, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what Freeze decides to do against this Texas A&M defense that that you just saw in Starkville.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you, Parrish. I mean, obviously, if Ole Miss had already qualified for a bowl and you know, things were good on that front, I think you might could get by with Peller in these last few games. But Ole Miss is still trying to fight to get into a bowl game. And too, Parrish, if Shea Patterson is as good as you think he is, you may not have him for 4 years anyway. I mean, obviously, you know, you see a lot of quarterbacks coming out, especially if they're going to be a first-round draft pick. You know, they'll come out their junior year if that's where they're projected. So if he's as good as advertised, then, you know, you may not have him for a senior year anyway. And obviously, these last three games are going to be meaningful for Ole Miss. They need to win at least a couple of them to get to a bowl. And, they're sitting here at 4-5, just like Mississippi State is. And got some big games ahead. I mean, they still have the A&M game. They still have Mississippi State and the Egg Bowl. Who's their other game, Parrish? Is it Vanderbilt?
Well, their other game is against Vanderbilt. And on paper, yes, Vanderbilt's record is not inspiring. But look, this is not a good matchup for Ole Miss playing in Nashville in a couple of weeks, because Vanderbilt plays good defense and they play physical. And look, they've got a star running back. They've got an all-SEC caliber back in Ralph Webb. And Ole Miss, although it played a better second half against Georgia Southern, consider the opponent, but they played a better second half against Georgia Southern enough to give them an idea that they're trying to build on something, to maybe take some momentum into the Texas A&M game. But still, the Vanderbilt game, if Ole Miss can get by, look, the path to six wins when this season started unfolding, Ole Miss fans were not expecting a win at College Station, and the path to six was going to include beating Georgia Southern, which they have now accomplished, beating Vanderbilt, and beating Mississippi State. All three of those things, they would have had a very, very good chance with Chad Kelly, but now it's very different. The Vanderbilt game is a bad matchup because of how Vanderbilt plays defense, and because Ole Miss does not defend the run, and Vanderbilt has an all-SEC type of back in Ralph Webb. So that's a very interesting game coming up on the schedule. Yeah, I agree. I do not think Shea Patterson will be around for a fifth year, for a senior season at Ole Miss. Lots of times, Logan, you get these guys who were rated so highly coming out of high school, and they just believe that they are supposed to leave as underclassmen, whether they're ready or not. And you see examples of that all the time. Ole Miss has a recent one with Jevon Snead. He was not ready to leave as a junior, but he did. He didn't get drafted. You know, so there's that, too. That's sometimes guys just have it in their mind that that they're not supposed to stay for a senior season. And I just don't think Shea Patterson will be around for one, but you just never know. And that's what Hugh Freeze is dealing with this week, trying to make that decision. Ultimately, I think he's going to end up playing both Patterson and Pellerin in this game. Who starts is irrelevant, you know. But look,
And another thing, too, you know, if Shea Patterson does get injured down the line, he still has that redshirt year to fall back on if you burn it this year.
Yeah, so you have that going on, too. But again, you know, we're talking about, okay, you want to make Patterson better, and you'd like to see him developed, and maybe he's ahead of the game when September comes around next year, and he's a sophomore. But look, it could very well be that he's your best chance to win these last three. Because the strength of your offense, if you don't have Kelly, the strength of your offense is your wide receivers. So who gets the ball downfield and who gets the ball to those guys? Who does it better? Is it going to be Shea Patterson or Jason Pellerin? And, you know, based on what we've seen of Pellerin, though I think he has improved, I think the answer to who gets it downfield better is going to be Shea Patterson.
Yeah, and going ahead and looking at Mississippi State's game this past weekend against Texas A&M, it was the best performance, you know, I've seen from this Mississippi State team. In fact, I haven't seen that team play all year long. I mean, they played a complete ball game, and that game caught me by surprise. I was definitely not expecting that. You know, based on what I had seen the previous week, I knew Mississippi State's offense would be able to put up some points against A&M, but I didn't think that they would be able to keep pace with them. Mississippi State's defense had played so terribly against Samford, you know, gave up over 600 and something yards to Samford, you know, 27 first downs, 41 points, and then you got a high-powered A&M offense coming in. I just expected them to roll, but, you know, credit and tip your hat to Mississippi State's defense. They improved tremendously over this past week. They made tackles, they covered, they got pressure on the quarterback. It was their best game, and it was also the best game for Mississippi State's offensive line, the best I'd seen them play. Texas A&M came in into that game leading the country in tackles for loss. They were also 10th in sacks per game. Mississippi State ended up with 365 yards rushing in that game and did not allow a sack. I mean, that was really, really impressive. I mean, they got tremendous push. They opened up holes. Mississippi State had, you know, Nick Fitzgerald rushed for 182 yards and two touchdowns. Aris Williams rushed for 140 yards and a touchdown. And they just kind of grinded out some drives. I mean, Mississippi State should have had actually two more touchdowns than they did. Nick Fitzgerald threw two interceptions in the end zone, and Texas A&M should have had one less touchdown than what they had. I mean, obviously, the 93-yard punt return right before halftime, it was just some egregious missed calls on that play. I mean, blocking the backs right there in front of the officials, no flags thrown, and obviously that was a huge momentum swing in that ball game because Mississippi State would have went into the locker room with a 28-7 lead at that point. But obviously Texas A&M puts up that late touchdown, gives them a little bit of momentum coming out in the second half, but they also came out in that second half without Trevor Knight. He got hurt late in that second quarter, hurt his shoulder. But early in the game, he was really, really erratic with his passes. I mean, it took him a while before he even completed one. And they didn't have a first down in the entire second quarter for A&M's offense. It was just they weren't clicking for whatever reason, whether that was Mississippi State's defense or they were having some issues of their own. Early on in that ball game, Texas A&M's offense really didn't click until Kubanek came in there. Kubanek was 11 out of 17, 222 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception. That interception was actually on their final drive of the game. Mark McLaurin made a big interception to kind of seal the win for Mississippi State late in that ball game. But Kubanek was pretty impressive. If you would have shown me, you know, the tape of that game, you know, and told me which one was the better or which one was the starting quarterback, I would have thought it would have been Kubanek because Trevor Knight was just didn't look himself out there in that ball game. And I don't know if he was injured coming in, but he sure, you know, obviously left the game with that shoulder injury. We're told he's out for the rest of the regular season. There's a potential that he could come back for the bowl game. But all in all, that was Mississippi State's best complete game. You know, we'll have to see how they do this weekend going to Alabama, because obviously that's a tall task to go into Tuscaloosa.
What did you think of Miles Garrett? I know he was playing injured in that game. What did you see of him, the Texas A&M defensive end, one of their two very good ones?
Not much. Obviously, I thought Miles Garrett, and I still think this, that if he's healthy, he's the best defensive player in the entire SEC. I mean, I voted for him last year as the defensive player of the year. He got my vote in the AP rankings a year ago, but I think very highly of him, but he's just not even close. I mean, if I had to guess, he was probably at 60-70%. I mean, he just didn't have an impact on that ball game. They were going to play him on third downs going into that game, but they fell behind so quickly, so early in that ball game that they actually played him a lot more than they originally thought. But he didn't make an impact on the game whatsoever, except for a late hit on a quarterback that gave Mississippi State another chance.
You know, college football, Logan, is such an emotional game sometimes, and how you feel about what you're seeing is often dictated week to week, and you have to stop and you have to consider the big picture of things. And I know that Mississippi State fans were not pleased with what they saw defensively against Samford. It looks to me like that offense has been improving steadily Ole Miss fans were feeling pretty good coming out of the Auburn game. You know, you're driving against that very good team, number 15 at the time, and Ole Miss has a chance to take the lead there, to retake the lead in the middle of the fourth quarter. Evan Engram drops a touchdown pass, and on the next play, Kelly throws an interception. Auburn returns it to the red zone and scores, and it's a two-possession game. But that was a game in which Kelly threw for a school record 465 yards. You know, you felt good about how your offense was clicking in that game, and then you come out against Georgia Southern. You know, they're a little bit flat, but they rally and kind of, you know, stabilize things and take control, and then all of a sudden you've lost Chad Kelly for the year. I mean, it really turns on a dime, and Ole Miss goes into these last three games. Really, what they know about themselves on defense isn't good, and what they don't know about themselves is on offense and who's going to be their primary quarterback. So a lot to learn for Ole Miss in the last couple of games. Let's talk a little bit about MSU and Alabama. Logan, look, on paper, it just looks like a game that State has no chance. Do they get blown out? Do they compete? What do you see in this game? I don't think Alabama runs up a big score.
They have it in the past. I mean, the last two times Mississippi State has gone to Tuscaloosa, they've went in there undefeated, and they haven't scored in the first three quarters of those games. You know, obviously, those are some really good Mississippi State teams that went over there and, you know, didn't have a whole lot of success. You know, the last time they went over there as the number one team in the country, and Alabama handed them their first loss and took that number one ranking away. But, you know, obviously, this is a better Alabama team than even those teams were. I mean, they're really good on offense. I think they have one of the top offenses in the conference, and they have the number one defense, I think, in the country. So they're really good on both sides of the ball. I mean, obviously, four and five star talent at every position and deep at every position. I mean, you know, they, like Dan Mullen said earlier this week, they've got guys that are redshirting and are on the bench that can't even get a rep in the game that would be starting at a lot of schools. And it's just the talent that Nick Saban has brought over there to Tuscaloosa and has established that program as one of the premier programs in all of college football. And, you know, it's not going to be just a Mississippi State thing. It's pretty much everybody that goes into Tuscaloosa is facing these same circumstances. And, I think Mississippi State gained some confidence with their win last week against A&M. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but at the same time, I think Mississippi State is going to struggle over there. Alabama's going to make some plays. And for Mississippi State to kind of keep it close, they're going to have to hit some big plays. They're going to have to get things going with that 1-2 combination that kind of worked last week with Nick Fitzgerald and Aris Williams running out of the backfield. Fred Ross is going to have a good day in the receiving game. And the defense, especially in the secondary, needs to continue to make strides there. One thing that helped Mississippi State in an A&M game was getting a lot of starters back. They got four starters back, five players returned from injury in that game, and it kind of gave them some sort of stability. They've got a lot of young players on that team, and you know, just getting some of those senior starters just back out there on the field, even if they're not 100%, just to get them lined up right and make sure they make the right calls out there on the field really helped them out tremendously.
Shifting gears a little bit, Ole Miss opens basketball season Friday night at 6 at home against Tennessee Martin. Andy Kennedy played quite a few players, 10 of them to be exact, in the big exhibition win over Morehouse. That will expand a little bit. It won't rescind yet. That play-in rotation is going to still have a lot of people for a while, but it will add this week freshman center Nate Morris, who Kennedy compares to Reggie Buckner as a shot blocker and rim protector, and Ole Miss really hasn't had that the last few years. It'll be interesting to see what he's able to accomplish, but it'll be a while before the Rebels reduce that playing rotation. And when you have that many guys playing and that many guys trying to impress when they get in because they don't know how long they're going to stay in the game, sometimes you get guys loose with the ball, and Ole Miss had 20 turnovers in the exhibition. That's a number they'll try to get down against Tennessee Martin. So the Rebels, 6 o'clock on Friday. It's actually the last game of a busy day at the Pavilion, the new arena at Ole Miss. There will be a triple header of sorts with an SEC volleyball match with Ole Miss and Tennessee at 11 a.m. on Friday. followed by the Ole Miss women's game, their season opener against Southeastern Louisiana at 2:30, and then the men's game at 6. So a busy day there at the Pavilion at Ole Miss. Logan, let's throw it back to you. Let's talk about this new athletics director at Mississippi State. I think a lot of people are familiar with him, and maybe the reason there was some time in naming John Cohen AD was because they were finalizing things with their new baseball coach. What do you think?
I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, and you wanted to, since Mississippi State's still in the midst of fall practice, you wanted to make it a smooth transition. You didn't want to have Cohen take the AD job and then you're left without a baseball coach. So they were able to make that process happen very, very quickly. Cohen was named the AD Friday afternoon, and later that afternoon, Andy Cannizzaro, from the former LSU assistant coach, was on campus, and Cohen led that Friday afternoon scrimmage, and with Cannizzaro kind of there studying things, and the next day he sort of takes over. Sunday he had his first practice at Mississippi State, and he was officially announced the head baseball coach on Monday, formally at a press conference. And I think Mississippi State hit a home run with this. He's a young, energetic guy, 37 years old, has a pedigree. I wish he played in the big leagues with the Yankees and with the Tampa Bay Rays. He was a scout for 5 years in the Yankees organization. He's only been in college baseball as an assistant coach for 2 years, but he's been around the game his whole life. He's very well respected. I think he's going to be an excellent recruiter. He obviously was at LSU. He was their recruiting coordinator and hitting coach there. And just judging from the reaction from Mississippi State players, they love him. I mean, he has been a really excellent hire, I think, John Coe. I mean, obviously, when you have a baseball coach become your AD, I mean, he obviously knows who to go after for his replacement. And I think Mississippi State did a really good job. I mean, obviously, the jury is still out. I mean, he's still, you know, 0-0. We don't know exactly what the on-field product is going to be, but I think it's going to be a bright, bright future for Mississippi State.
I thought it was an interesting hire, Logan, not good or bad one way or the other, but interesting that a head coach making a hire for his replacement placed a value on recruiting more than on head coach experience.
Yeah, and one thing that helps, though, is he has Gary Henderson on the staff. Obviously, he has all those years of head coaching experience at Kentucky, and he's got sort of that, you know, and obviously John Cohen's still going to be around as well. So Andy Cannizzaro, even though he doesn't have head coaching experience, has two guys to sort of lean on that can, you know, kind of mentor him through these first, you know, a couple of months on the job and kind of get his feet wet with that head coaching position. But, you know, judging from what he said all the right things in that press conference on Monday, and just judging by the reaction from the players, I think they did a good job. I think he's ready for that head coaching position.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up a little bit. We got just a couple of minutes left. How about basketball? When do they get started?
Well, Mississippi State's women and men both get started on Friday. The women, they're ranked number 10 in the country. They get started with Villanova. They're actually playing in the main tip-off tournament. So they're way up there in the Northeast playing. They'll play Villanova and either Purdue or Maine on Saturday. But they open up with Villanova. And then on the men's side, they open up with Norfolk State at home Friday night at 7 o'clock. And, you know, Mississippi State played okay in their first game against Delta State last Friday. You know, a lot of young guys on the court. And you could tell early on, especially in that first half, that a lot of those young guys were nervous playing out there for the first time. But Mario Kegler really, really came on for Mississippi State, played an excellent ball game. I think he's going to be a bright spot for them this year. And Eric Coleman had a double-double. That was encouraging to see. He only played half a season last year, and obviously Mississippi State only has three returning players from last year's team. So, and Holman's one of those guys. So, yeah, I think they're going to be, you know, they're going to have some games where they're going to not look good. They're probably going to lose some games that they shouldn't, but I think this team is good enough and talented enough that they're going to win some games they shouldn't win. So it's going to be an interesting season for Ben Allen.
Well, you know, we've talked about these Ole Miss transfers before and how they need to be good from the beginning. And I thought, at least in the exhibition, there was a good start for that. And you saw a lot of production early. You saw some scoring from DeAndre Burnett and Cullen Neal. Remember those names. Neal in particular had a really good game in the exhibition with 19 points, 7 assists, and 2 turnovers. the Rebels moved the ball pretty well in that game. So those are two guys. You know, we'll talk about this playing rotation because this is what Andy Kennedy does every year. He's going to play a lot of guys, and he's going to give them minutes, and he's going to see how they respond in game situations. And from that, he'll trim that playing rotation down, but that'll still be several weeks out. But two guys that Ole Miss is going to have play well if they're going to be in position for an NCAA tournament run will be these transfers, Burnett and Neal, and both of them did that in the exhibition against Morehouse. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. Remember to look for our news podcast, The Memo, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and our high school sports podcast, Prep Rally, with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan, also Brad Locke in there as well. That comes to you every Wednesday, and Logan and I will be back at you next week with more Double Coverage. Come join us.